Welcome to Holden Village. Today is Friday, June 15th, 2001. In the fireside room this morning, Eunice Scarfe continues her presentation entitled Writing to Heal and Renew. This is session SCE 2001-4. Let's listen in.
So that if by any chance a line from what you've heard shows up in a text that you later read aloud, you can give credit. You can say, I've written this after hearing Donald Hall's poem, A Grace. And perhaps I should put this over a bit further. I'll be reading from either two or three of these pieces. And again, there are diverse ways of coming at the notion of memory or loss. How tell the story, so they will be different in the content. Donald Hall, how many of you know Donald Hall? Anyone know Donald Hall? I expect you to. He's a poet in New Hampshire, still alive and well. His wife was Jane Kenyon, who was the writer of the poem that was read on the Tuesday night vespers called When Evening Comes. She has since writing that poem, died of leukemia, a very young death in her 40s. Donald Hall's book of poetry called Without is an entire collection of poetry in the first year without Jane, the wife. And they address his loss, and many address Jane herself. So this piece I'm reading is by Donald Hall long before Jane died. They were both interviewed by Bill Moyers in The Language of Life. So none of the poems from Without had yet been written. But this one addresses loss. And again, when you hear poetry, please don't say, oh, I missed the meaning of that line. If you miss the meaning, pay attention just to the sounds, the music. Are they soft sounds? Are they harsh sounds? Are they comforting? Are they disruptive? The summary of what it means is not our intention. It is to listen to a line that does speak to you and record that. That's as much as we're doing with the poems today. This is a very brief one called Grace by Donald Hall. A Grace. God, I know nothing. My sense is all nonsense. And fear of you begins intelligence. Does it end there? For sexual love, for food, for books and birch trees, I claim gratitude. But when I grieve over the unripe dead, my grief festers, corrupted into dread, and I know nothing. Give us this day our daily bread. And he says to Bill Moyers, people rarely seem to me to have lived out their lives and to be finished when they die. When someone I love dies before their time, I regret it. And this is something I reproach myself for, the regret. If I accept God's control of the universe, I should accept the deaths whenever they come, and yet I don't, says Donald Hall. And then he goes on to discuss the poem. So let me read it again. A Grace, in which he's saying, my grief festers, corrupted into dread, over the unripe dead, or dead too soon. I'll read once more. If you like a phrase, write it down. Just let it sit on your page till we finish the readings, please. God, I know nothing. My sense is all nonsense. And fear of you begins intelligence. Does it end there? For sexual love, for food, for books and birch trees, I claim gratitude. But when I grieve over the unripe dead, my grief festers, corrupted into dread, and I know nothing. Give us this day our daily bread. Remember, he calls it a grace. All right? And the second one I'm going to leave, one by Stanley Kunitz. And read Julia Kastorf, which some of you heard earlier this week. It's called What I Learned from My Mother. And my question after this piece is going to be, who have you comforted? Who's comforted you? You can address that if you wish. This is a piece about comfort. Julia Kastorf is a Mennonite, perhaps in her 50s. Her poems have appeared in The New Yorker, and she's won an award for one published collection of poetry, Kastorf. I learned from my mother how to love the living, to have plenty of vases on hand in case you have to rush to the hospital with peonies cut from the lawn, black ants still stuck to their buds. I learned to save jars large enough to hold fruit salad for a whole grieving household, to cube home-canned pears and peaches, to slice through maroon grape skins and flick out the sexual seeds with a knife point. I learned to attend viewings, even if I didn't know the deceased, to press the moist hands of the living, to look in their eyes and offer sympathy as though I understood loss even then. I learned that whatever we say means nothing. What anyone will remember is that we came. I learned to believe I had the power to ease awful pains materially, like an angel. Like a doctor, I learned to create from another's suffering my own usefulness. And once you know how to do this, you can never refuse. To every house you enter, you must offer healing, a chocolate cake you baked yourself, the blessing of your voice, your chaste touch. One question you might wish to address is, how have you been comforted? Who has comforted you? The other side of that, to whom have you given comfort and under what circumstances? There's story around the issue of comfort, giving and receiving. Remember, she is addressing what I learned from my mother, how to love the living, those who remain behind. So you don't need to address. You could start what I learned from my mother, and it could be totally unrelated to loss. You can go that direction if you like. The question I suggest to you is, who has comforted me? What's that story? Who have I comforted? Who have I comforted? What's that story? All right, now with some hesitation, I'm reading from an essay I wrote myself, and that's the preface to that. It ties in with today's story, or it is the degree to which brought me to the notion of story and what function it serves. And I'm excerpting this, making it very brief. It begins, it's titled No Time to Die, and I was asked to write this because we all know, do we not, that you don't send in essays about your own experience of death and dying. At least I knew that I wasn't to just ship off an essay to every publication around. I was asked to write this because that anthology was on experiencing something twice, could be anything, failure twice, graduation twice, two children, two divorces. And this is my story of twice. I've been widowed twice. Some days I feel like the ancient mariner with an unwelcome story to tell. After the first death, I felt I should carry the story in silence. After the second death, I knew I must not. Bereavement is as inevitable as death. If you haven't been bereaved, you will be, which you know, of course, but perhaps you can forget more easily and more often than I. Who are the bereaved? They are those who follow the dead to the edge of the grave. And then what? They must return. But the return from the grave is unmarked and dark. How do the bereaved find their way? The ancient Greeks believed that there were three stages of grief: the death itself, the burial, and the reintegration of the bereaved, the coming away from the edge of the grave, the return to the living and to living. It is ritual for this third stage that is utterly absent in my experience of mourning and maybe of yours. There is ritual for burial, but not for mourning. How do the bereaved return from the grave? Through story, I believe. Turn and return, I call it, a cyclical process of remembering the story and turning from it, remembering death again and turning from it again. Ritual is what is repeated. Ritual is a practice that is known and understood by a community. Ritual is a dwelling that we enter and leave again. Ritual is where meaning can be made. Ritual is where more than one gather together, where all participate and partake. In the absence of ritual after the first death, I was lost and bereft. 6 years later, after the second death, I created a ceremony for story, which may become a ritual if we choose to do it again and then again. I invited the women who had cared for me and my children, some of whom had now tended us twice, to come to my home on the evening before the first Sunday in Advent, that season preparing for the darkest day of the year and for the return of light to our lives. I invited them to light a candle on our evergreen tree in memory of their dead. Each one was invited to tell a story of the person for whom the candle was lit. We heard stories we had never heard before, even though some of us had known each other for years. Some of us had more than one candle to light. Where there is sorrow, there is holy ground, it has been said. Where there is sorrow's story, there is common ground. Where there is common ground, there is comfort. After each death, I heard how other cultures and religions, some ancient, make room for rituals of remembrance, for the repetition of story. A Ukrainian friend told me about bringing a meal to the graves on an annual day and spending time with other mourners beside all the graves. My Irish friend said the month mind, that is, a mass 1 month after the funeral, is almost more important than the funeral itself. My Greek friend said a mass is celebrated 3 years after the funeral and relatives from as far as Greece will come to Toronto. My Japanese friend said that the day of the death is honored on the 3rd, 7th, and 10th year anniversaries in very formal and festive ways. My Jewish friend told me a yahrzeit candle is lit on the anniversary of the death and that the spirit of the dead person fills the room for 24 hours. She said that saying Kaddish at the synagogue brings mourners together and that the names of the dead are read and remembered at Yom Kippur. And I go on through every other culture I heard about or read about during that time. The purpose of all these customs I now understand, and none was part of my tradition. And I understand now how huge and perhaps toxic is the reservoir of ungrieved grief in a culture that has no ritual for mourning. The dead die once, the bereaved die over and over and over. In story is both the first resurrection of the dead, to remember them, and the certain resurrection of the bereaved, to return from the edge of the grave. My invitation for you is to remember, to write in remembrance of, or in memory of, giving or receiving comfort, or in honor of a life whose story you wish to tell. You can also address a letter to one who has gone before, or a letter from one who has gone before. The writer can make this work, to address a letter to the one who has gone before, or a letter from one who has gone before. And lastly, I invite you, if you like, before you begin, is to name those who are your dead, who belong to you, who are in the cloud of witnesses. So that the first thing I'd suggest, though if you're ready to write, don't do this, is to name those names who are yours to remember. What you might choose then to do is to circle one and say, I'll tell that story, or write in response to that. Now you have enough to do to keep yourself both in feeling and in writing for 24 hours, and we're starting with 15 minutes. Make yourself comfortable. Where there's story, there's tears. If there are tears, let them be the music that accompanies your story. Remember, if you don't wish to go this direction in subject matter, you still have the 15 minutes for a journal entry at Holden, for any other piece of writing you want to continue from what you started earlier this week. Then you'll be invited to read, if you like, totally optional.
Do you want to read?